Welcome to Value-Based Care Insights, brought to you by Lumina Health Partners, a national healthcare consulting firm focused on improving the strategic, financial, and operational performance of provider organizations. On this program, we will explore trends and share valuable insights on how health systems and medical groups can optimize their performance to meet the demands of this increasingly complex healthcare environment and shift to transform the delivery of care. Value-Based Care Insights is hosted by Daniel Marino, Managing Partner of Lumina Health Partners. Daniel has been in the industry for over 3 decades and specializes in shaping strategic initiatives for organizations in areas such as population health, clinical integration, physician alignment, information technology, and data analytics. For additional insights, visit luminahp.com and sign up for our newsletter. Dan, over to you.
Welcome to Value-Based Care Insights. I'm your host, Daniel Marino. I'm really excited about today's episode. This is our 100th episode of Value-Based Care Insights. Well, I'm really excited in celebration of our 100th episode to talk about a topic sort of bringing all of this together. And we're entitling this Physician Leader's Journey. And as background, as we know, leaders have a lot of challenges. Particularly physician leaders have a lot of challenges understanding how to align with goals, build effective management structures, really setting the path for high-performing organizations to really drive the performance, drive the care, drive all of the goals that we need to accomplish in order to serve the needs of our communities and our patients. Well, today's guest, I couldn't be more excited to have with us today, Dr. Eric Velasquez. Dr. Velasquez serves as a section chief for the section of cardiovascular medicine for Yale School of Medicine. Doug McKinley, the other guest that's joining us today, clinical psychologist. Doug has worked in the field within clinical and administrative leadership development for many years, a wealth of knowledge. Very excited to have both of you join us today. Dr. Velasquez, Doug, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dan, and congratulations on your 100th episode. I'm very honored to be part of this discussion today.
Yeah, woohoo. This is terrific.
Yeah, well, thank you. Very excited. Very excited. So, Eric, maybe we could start with you. Thinking back, you've been in your role as the section chief in the section of cardiovascular medicine now for a few years, obviously moving into the organization. And you had some ideas in terms of what you wanted to accomplish. And thinking back, creating that vision, setting the alignment, what were a couple of things that you did off the bat or that in reflecting on that you thought was important in order to really start establishing that alignment of vision?
Thanks, Dan, for that question. I was new to the institution, and the institution that I was joining and the organization that I was in a position to lead had been a bit rudderless for many years, and had actually had some traumatic episodes in the distant past. And so I think we have to recognize that the context matters as a leader, and so I would say that what I felt was critical was to really evaluate the landscape and those who were hungry for my new leadership, listen extensively and gather information around what were the most acute challenges and begin to prioritize with those on the ground about how to address those challenges. And, mm-hmm. and so I think that was, I would say, while a lot is made about the first 100 days, I think sometimes you have to, what you do in those first 100 days is important, but it doesn't always have to be, action oriented. I think it can be very effective, and I think it was needed in my situation to be actively listening and actively gathering information instead of necessarily having specific initiatives or changes to personnel or other things done, which sometimes is what I think gets the most, credit in that first 100 days construct.
I would say
that was one lesson that I would give people, is that how you construct, how you use those first several months, has to be context specific. And in my case, I thought it was important to recognize that this organization needed someone to understand, the situation that we were in and take the time to listen.
Well, and listening, I think, was key. And as we've talked about time and time again, sometimes that's difficult for leaders, because they automatically, our intention is to get in and to make change as quick as possible. And sometimes the biggest change we can make is just sitting back and listening. Doug, when you reflecting back, when you started to work with Eric, were there a couple of things that you can draw on that thinking back was a big support to Eric in his new role as within the organization as a leader and even working with the team?
Yeah, actually, I thought of another thing. Eric, you were so kind. I mean, he kind of inherited me, because I was working with Eric's boss and that cabinet, that team at the time. And so in corporate, we call it onboarding. So the suggestion from his leader was that I partner with Eric to try to onboard him and get him in that context is decisive, I think is a terrific line. Context is a big deal. And so just to support him through that. And he was very, I want to say this, Erica, you need to know this. You were very gracious and open. Some of the people that I get assigned to are not. And so my recommendation to leaders are when this is available to you, is to seek that and take it as that. There was a big shift that happened. Go ahead, Dan. Were you going to say something?
No, I was going to say, and a lot of times it's hard for new leaders, because they don't want to fail, right? They want to come in and make a splash. All eyes are on them. Sometimes it's hard to be vulnerable and ask for help.
Well, and I was working with Eric's new leader, boss. So what does this mean? Where am I as the outside consultant? Where are my allegiances, right? Is it safe for Eric to talk to me? And so my initial work with leaders is always to create a psychologically safe space, confidentiality and all that stuff, because, there's lots of stories out there, right, where these boundaries are violated. And Eric, I don't know if you remember that time, but you were extremely gracious and open and seemed, very coachable. And I don't know how to teach that. That was something you brought to the table.
Well, thanks, Doug. I would just say that, when the comment you made, maybe Dan, I think it was you made it, make a splash. And that was really what I'm trying to convey is, you can make a splash in many different ways, and it depends on the context. And I think in my situation, when I entered my role, the splash that I want to create was of a new era where it mattered to build, trust and collaboration with those who were leading. It mattered to be positioning folks to be listened to, and to gather information and build, priorities and establish strategic initiatives that were not reactive.
Yeah,
which I think was really, in retrospect, I think. Obviously it was second nature perhaps to myself, but wasn't necessarily to the organization that I inherited.
That's a good point. So Eric, when you think about what you did as a brand new leader to this organization, I kind of think that there's three elements that are really important, right? So you need to build yourself an effective team. You need to create trust. You need to introduce and create the tools that are going to drive the success, right? The performance success. But an important piece of that, and I would say almost the underlying foundation, is culture. You have to set the right culture with the right level of expectation. Thinking back, what were some of the things that you accomplished to kind of set that culture direction, if you will, for the section, with the team, with your leaders, to help to kind of drive and achieve those visionary goals?
Yeah, I mean, I think as a leader, it is, you know, prominently, I think your key role to establish the culture of the organization and actually model that culture in your activities. And so, getting back to the points made earlier, I think, you know, that transformation is not something that happens overnight. It needs to be, something that's,
right,
thought through. But you know, what I think worked on was, gathering information as much as possible from those who were in positions of leadership within the organization already. Key action-oriented activities that I took on was a recognition that we needed to align the leaders of the future within the organization with the culture that I felt was needed.
Well, and I often heard you describe that when you started as kind of a divided house, right?
Yeah. Because no, I
you
think
were battling past history and then needed to set the division, bring the group together or bring the team together to really set a direction.
I purposely was very interested in the culture of silos and how you manage silos. And I think we were a very divided house. And there's value to silos. I think that, to build a lot of vertical expertise, but if that expertise can't communicate with other components of an organization, the organization as a whole suffers. And so part of my really clear focus was to identify, a new leadership team within the organization that recognizes the value of not breaking down silos, but kind of developing communication paths between those levels of expertise within the organization and developing a more increasing trust among everyone that we weren't going to take their piece of cheese away, that we were going to actually work to hopefully, build more opportunities for them in their roles, but they had to kind of buy in that we were stronger together than as individuals. And I think that was not the case previously.
Yeah, and build and buy into the process. You're absolutely right. If you're just tuning in, I'm Daniel Marino. You're listening to Value-Based Care Insights. I'm here talking today to Dr. Velasquez, Dr. Doug McKinley. This is our 100th episode. Very excited. Our topic is a physician leader's journey, enhancing the culture and the change agent for growth. Doug, let me build on one of the things that Eric just mentioned. Building the team was going to be critical, right? And you mentioned that you helped him build his team really around the cabinet, right? Thinking back, what were a couple of those key concepts or maybe programs or things that you introduced to help establish the leadership team around Eric?
I don't remember that, but the specific thing, I'd like to just say, when you describe this, Dan, of course you build a team, of course you set culture. I haven't found that to be a natural first move for very many physician leaders, let alone any leader. So I think Eric was unique in that he was open to that. So my recollection, Eric, is that we just kept talking about that and said, what is it, air quotes, that we have to create?
Right.
I think the tendency for physicians, just to be quite frank, is to do it alone. Heroic leadership has been really, it's traced and it's been marked. Our past history is marked with heroic leadership. And I'm not making that as a positive. I'm saying that's an unfortunate reality. And so in heroic culture, in heroic leadership culture environments, people have to swoop in and save the day instead of building a really healthy, safe space for all people to contribute. And it's now being called inclusive leadership. So yeah, I would say it was just that vulnerability and trust between Eric and I, where he was reading books, I was reading books. We started reading a couple of books together and we co-created the ideas and the vision Eric would get on his whiteboard and he would just, you've seen him do this, Dan. He would just draw all these things that made no sense to me or him, but he just kept drawing and drawing. And he finally was able to articulate a grand vision, and the ecosystem through which we were going to support that had to be established. So I think it's really strategic conversations would be the only way I can explain it.
I'm just going to follow up with one thing, because I think Doug's being too humble. I do think that one of the things that I would say to Doug was critical is, you know, sometimes, you know, it depends on the individual, and it depends then on the situation for each individual. But you know, I think Doug drove me to recognize that I wanted to accelerate some of the ideas that I, you know, was positioning, and that to do that effectively, and I had to, you know, put myself out there by defining, you know, those areas I've called them domains, critical domains that required, you know, senior leadership, and to choose those individuals, you know, frankly, based on character traits that we've talked about already, and right. the kind of culture that we wanted to create, and that would allow me to take this, and I, you know, we were joking before, you know, I see this as an aircraft carrier. We, you know, this is a massive organization with a lot of technical expertise, amazing faculty and staff, but not everyone you know, it was rudderless in a way. It wasn't directed, and I think to move it and move it faster in the right direction, I had to kind of move things around, and my tendency, and I think this is where we talk about areas of discomfort. My tendency is that everyone stays on the carrier when it's making a redirection. You know, that's my goal. I would like to make people happy. That's probably I don't know if it's a weakness, but it is a reality that Doug has helped me understand about my own self. But some people are not going to stay on. Right. And that's okay. And that, you know, I think as long as they understand the direction we need to go into, those are decisions people can make for themselves. So I would say that, you know, very important was the need to kind of say, okay, now we have to kind of start, you know, accelerating, and I can't do it alone.
Yeah. I was going to ask that question. How difficult was it for you in the early days for you to, you know, using your analogy, to want to steer the ship versus delegating some responsibility to others to help you steer the ship?
I think it is hard because you know, particularly in my situation, I wasn't part of the organization previously. So I was, you know, while I knew a lot of individuals who were collaborators and colleagues from afar you know, when I was in a different institution, I was, you know, assessing, you know, actually, right. You know, assessing whether people's skill sets and focus and their character were ones that were going to mesh well with where we wanted to go, and be able to lead people the way I wanted them to be led into the future. And so I think my natural tendency was to be cautious, because these were roles that were going to upset others who may have been, you know, may have had those responsibilities in the past. But I'm very, very pleased with where we ended, and we're still in the midst of that, you know, process. But Doug, you know, that relationship, that ability to discuss the strategic priorities, and for him to understand and give me the, you know, kind of an awareness, because it helped me get to the awareness that, you know, the next phase of this was to, you know, really start actively redirecting this aircraft carrier and moving it faster in the direction I needed to go. And that was something I needed to do with, you know, I could be captain of that carrier, but I needed people, you know, manning the gunships and manning you know, the nuclear reactor downstairs, you know, and all that. I mean, that's my visual for this. I needed folks.
You do it all on your own, right? Yeah, I mean, you're only one person, and there's only so much time in a day. It's hard. You just have to be able to delegate.
And that's not natural for folks who are, you know, no. I think that, like, to this point, I think a lot of people would think they just need to get it done on them. That's their job. They just need to get it done and, you know, and just do it themselves. But the reality is, I think we moved much faster and actually have made much more, you know, we've accomplished much more.
Right. So Doug, just kind of building on what Eric said, I think that's just such an interesting point. I'm sure you see that quite a bit, right? Where leaders want to take on, they want to do it, right? They want to drive it. They feel passionate about their work. And, you know, engaging the team is just so critical.
Yeah, it's that's why I call heroic leadership. I think what we did early on with Eric, I don't know if you remember this, and I hope you don't mind me sharing this, but Eric's values and how he, his particular leadership vision is unique to him. And we had to be clear. And we came up with these two words that ended up, we didn't publicize them. You know, we didn't tell anybody this, but he really valued compassionate conviction. Mm-hmm. He had this intensity to him and tenacity and forward action, but it had to be held with compassion.
Compassion, so we had conviction. I love that, Doug. Yeah. That's great.
I know. I wanted to put it on a card. We chose not to. We went with other phrases, but that's the kind of team he needed to surround him that understood those values. And there were other people that wanted the positions, right? Like in every organization, there's people vying for leadership positions, but we knew it had to be people that could get behind not only the mission of the section and the department, but the way in which Eric wanted to lead and needs to lead. That's who he is. Leadership is more about who we are than what we do.
Yeah.
It has to come from that. So
yeah, that's such a great point. Eric, any pieces of advice? We have a lot of leaders who tune in, a lot of physician leaders, administrative leaders who tune in. Thinking back, are there pieces of advice that you can provide to some of our listeners around maybe if they're new leaders or struggling with kind of building the leadership teams? Any piece of advice you might want to share?
Yeah, I'm well, a few. Let me see if I can communicate this effectively. I think you have to give yourself time to reflect. I think if you're just go all the time and you don't give a chance to reflect on where we are and to kind of ensure that you've communicated effectively and over communicated down. I kind of believe in a matrixed organization, that's what I'm creating. But I think make sure that all the individuals that are in a position to, you know, put that culture into action, right, know what they're doing. And I think we've done that. We've dedicated efforts to enhance engagement and communication. We've run a few retreats. I think the challenge for that really was a pandemic that no one expected. And so I got there and then the pandemic happened. So, those were realities. The other thing is, you have to delegate to the people that you want to position yourself to lead out, your vision, but you need to make sure that they feel supported and that you make them accountable to the organization, to a certain part, but to the organization. And I think that that's important. That's a process. I think many people have limited experience in leadership, and we're all kind of, every situation, every context is different. One thing that I think Doug certainly reminded me, and I think I attribute this to him. I think I'm a cardiologist. I think we're very action oriented. We're results and deliverables related, oriented. And sometimes we don't take the time to celebrate, successes, even small ones. And I think reminded me that everyone needed a data boy occasionally, and we needed to all. And we needed as a leadership group to recognize when we had made some progress, I think, and celebrate that was important.
And going through what you described, it's tough, right? It's not an easy road. Celebrating even the small successes I think are really important. Doug, let me turn to you. Any pieces of advice you'd give some of the, you know, to our listeners, anything to new leaders or even the more experienced leaders?
Yeah, be like Eric. I'm being a little coy, but be humble. Have convictions, like be clear about what matters to the organization, align your values to the organization, to your leader, and then just build a team that you can do life with, right? It's hard work, and doing it alone is just really a terrible idea. Yeah. Nobody wants to follow a leader that's leading alone. And so be a leader that people want to follow. Be contagious. Yeah. Be, you know, everybody wants to say inspiring, but I think inspiration comes from conviction, right? You're clear. You know who you are. You know why you're leading, what you're leading. And it's a compelling narrative. So be a part of a compelling narrative.
And I love that term, Doug, compassion, compassionate conviction. I think that's great. Thanks again for joining today. Great discussion. Really appreciate it. And a special thanks to our listeners. Without you all tuning in, we've never would have been able to accomplish our 100th episode. So special thanks to all of you. Until our next insight, I am Daniel Marino, bringing you 30 minutes of value to your day. Take care.
Are you at a crossroad with value-based care? Do you need to chart a future strategy or improve your organizational performance? Visit us at luminahp.com to learn more about our consulting services and leadership development programs. Also, you can sign up for our newsletter on our website and follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn. For more information about value-based care insights, visit the program's page on healthcareradionow.com or luminahp.com. Join the conversation using our hashtag VBCInsights. We are Lumina Health Partners. Thank you for joining us today. Until the next value-based care insight, stay well.